Not since Nazi Germany's pre-World War II arms buildup has the world seen anything like the Soviet Union's current feverish pace of strengthening its military machine. Many analysts now feel that the Western world is seriously endangered with the threat of actual war because of the Soviet buildup. In the next half hour, we hope to take a good long look at what has now become the greatest military force in all of human history and to ask, what does it mean for our future? The first place where Soviet power threatens the West is Western Europe, where the United States has formed an alliance with other democratic nations known as NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. The purpose of NATO, of course, is to prevent a possible Soviet invasion of Western Europe. And yet today, in spite of NATO, many military analysts feel and believe that the Soviet Union and its allies in Eastern Europe, known as the Warsaw Pact nations, are strong enough in terms of conventional weapons to smash across West Germany in a couple of days. From the chart, it's obvious that the Soviet military force in Europe far exceeds any needs they might have to defend against a possible invasion from the West or to keep their East European allies in line. In fact, everything about the Soviet force in Europe suggests preparation for a blitzkrieg war. The Soviets have concentrated their troops in the North German plain, the easiest route to get to the heart of Europe. The Soviet army, like Hitler's before World War II, emphasizes armor and mechanized infantry. The Soviets maintain no fewer than 7 airborne divisions, which are necessary to prepare the way for an invasion. In Warsaw Pact military exercises, Soviet tactics emphasize preparatory missile strikes and tactical airstrikes, followed by a rapid invasion of armor and mechanized infantry forces. And finally, the Soviets themselves, when they write about theater warfare, say that their army must be able to travel at the rate of more than 70 miles a day. Because its forces are hopelessly outnumbered, current NATO strategy is to hope that the Soviets will tip their hand and give Western forces enough time to prepare for a possible invasion. But current NATO plans call for a warning of at least a month in advance, and one NATO vice admiral thinks it would take about 2.5 months for NATO forces to be put on a true war footing. And by that time, of course, it would be very much too late. While experts differ as to whether the Russians have enough troops in Central Europe to launch an invasion on a moment's notice or would require at least a few days of preparation, the fact does remain that NATO would be forced to use nuclear weapons to prevent the Soviets from overrunning all of Western Europe. Robert Close, a Belgian general who commands a NATO tank division in West Germany, thinks that if they wanted to, the Soviets could be on the Rhine in 48 hours. While U.S. Lieutenant General James Hollingsworth believes that they might take a more leisurely pace and make it in 144 hours. But this is why the United States has been working for more than a decade on the neutron bomb that you've heard a lot about in the news lately, a high radiation device with reduced blast and heat effects which would limit the damage to the surrounding cities with friendly civilians if it were used against an invading Russian army. On top of all this, NATO forces are currently positioned in the wrong place to defend an attack from Eastern Europe. The bulk of their forces are to the south of the Soviets' forces. And what's more, NATO forces in Central Europe suffer a severe shortage of anti-tank weapons, mine-laying equipment, and mobile artillery. In any case, the Soviet lead is so preponderant that many observers feel that once the Russian tanks got moving, it would be impossible to stop them. While the Soviets have been building up their land forces in Europe, they've also been creating the world's greatest navy. The Russian Navy has a much easier task than that of the American Navy. Since Russia is pretty much self-sufficient in raw materials, it doesn't have to depend upon trade and ocean commerce like the United States and Western Europe must do. All the Soviet Navy has to do is to be able to cut off the sea lanes, while the United States Navy has the comparatively much more difficult task of trying to keep them open. The world's sea lanes are particularly important when you think about Europe's oil supply. Perhaps this is why the expanding Soviet Navy is concentrated on the principal oil routes from the Persian Gulf and Indian Ocean around the Cape of Good Hope to destinations in the West. These routes carry 80% of West Europe's oil and 70% of all of its other strategic materials. In his book called The Sea Power of the State, the chief of the Soviet Navy, Sergei Gorshkov, makes much the same point. The Soviet Navy must be strong enough, he says, to cut off Europe's oil. And the former chief of American Defense Intelligence Agency, Daniel O. Graham, warns that the Soviet Navy is now more capable of cutting off Europe's sea lanes than the NATO navies are of keeping them open. The tremendous growth of the Soviet sea power is illustrated by a remarkable series of facts. The Soviets have from 2 to 3 times the ships of the United States Navy. Their submarine fleet is 3 times larger than America's. They possess the world's largest merchant marine, measured by number of ships. They possess the world's largest fishing fleet. British Captain John Moore flatly declares that the Soviet Navy has the most firepower of any fleet in all of history. And former Chief of U.S. Naval Operations Elmo Zumwalt says that, and I quote his words, the odds are that we would lose a naval confrontation in the Eastern Mediterranean or the Western Pacific, home of the U.S. 6th and 7th Fleets, respectively. The Soviet Navy threatens Western shipping in almost all waters of the globe. The Mediterranean was once considered an American lake, but Russian ships now number more than those of the United States 6th Fleet nearly at all times. In the Pacific, the Soviet Navy has grown by a third in 10 years, while its firepower has tripled and poses a clear threat to Japanese oil supplies. Soviet naval bases in Somalia and Yemen are in a position to control the southern gateway to the Red Sea, and today Soviet ships are a common sight in the Indian Ocean. Finally, in the North Atlantic, the Soviets are regularly violating Danish airspace, and Soviet warships are coming perilously close to the Danish and Norwegian coasts, all in an effort to intimidate northwestern Europe, and Norway in particular. The Soviets covet the Barents Sea with its oil, gas, and fishing supplies, as well as desire an unobstructed outlook into the open waters of the North Atlantic, which as yet they still don't have. It's quite obvious that the Soviet Union is fully prepared to rattle sabers long enough to get their objectives. Some analysts have speculated that the Soviets have built up their forces to make an invasion threat credible enough to convince Western Europe that the future lies in communism and that their fate really is already sealed, so why bother resisting so they can win a political battle by the military threat? Many defense critics complain that publicizing the Soviet military buildup is creating an unrealistic image. They scoff at the idea that the Russians are 10 feet tall. What they forget is that the first time scoffers used the phrase 10 feet tall, it was to scorn the warnings of Winston Churchill and others about Hitler's Wehrmacht. That mistake gave us World War II. Will the next mistake, if they're making one, give us World War III?
Pioneer 10 races out of our solar system while religious war rages in Northern Ireland. Politicians search for peace while pollution engulfs our planet. The gross national product of the United States exceeds $1 trillion, while over 15,000 people starve to death worldwide each day. In this age of paradox unparalleled, where can you turn for understanding? There is a source that answers the frightening questions of the 20th century. It's called The Plain Truth. This magazine of understanding reveals the meaning behind today's world news and shows you the good news beyond. Today, more than ever before, you need the plain truth. For your free sample copy of the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
If you'll pick up the telephone right now and dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444, and ask for your current copy of the Plain Truth magazine, your free subscription for one full year will begin, and you'll be receiving up-to-the-moment articles behind the scenes in world conditions just like this telecast that keep you really informed about what's going on and what it means for the future. Again, the number is 800-423-4444. In California, Alaska, and Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225, and it's free of charge. Well, the Soviet Union enjoys overwhelming supremacy in conventional weapons today, but their strength in nuclear weapons is growing too, to the point where it may now be ahead that of the United States. When we look at the facts of what the Russians are now capable of doing, we find that they are nothing short of frightening. And the heart and the core of strategic nuclear weapons are warheads and delivery systems, and the Russians may very well be ahead in both of those. Soviets have by far the biggest warheads. We've known that for a long time. The largest warhead and the largest Soviet missile, the SS-18 or 18, could carry a force of 50 megatons. The United States has nothing like that. Most Soviet warheads are measured in millions of tons of TNT, and most American warheads are measured in thousands. In fact, the United States is concentrated on developing warheads which are not as powerful as they might be in order to limit civilian casualties in the event of a nuclear war. The only hitch in this is that this may eventually allow the Kremlin to believe that so few of its people might be destroyed in a nuclear war that they might be tempted to start one. And so far as delivery systems are concerned, the United States, the USSR, is also pulling away from the United States there. While America has traditionally had the more accurate missiles, the latest Soviet missile, the SS-18, can come within 600 yards of its target. The significance of this is that it could destroy an American missile while it's still in a silo before it could ever get off the ground. Because America's land-based intercontinental ballistic missiles are fixed in stationary silos, it is possible, as Soviet missiles become more and more accurate, to think about a preemptive attack which might possibly destroy about 99% of America's land-based missile force. Now, America's bombers are vulnerable to attack. One analyst says that if the USSR were to attack our bombers without warning, using short-range missiles, most of them would be caught on the ground. According to Edward Luttbach, who is a respected defense analyst for London's International Institute for Strategic Studies, perhaps only 20% of our strategic bombers could survive Soviet attack, which means about 60 bombers. The 60 planes would have to face over 2,700 Soviet interceptors and nearly 20,000 surface-to-air missiles. It would be remarkable if any of them got through to their target, though it's possible the cruise missile could alter this when it comes online in the early 1980s. Until then, the United States bomber force, consisting of aging B-52s, remains of dubious deterrent value. Alfred Starbird, a National Security Administrator, notes that in order to penetrate the extremely heavy defenses of the USSR, a plane would have to fly at speeds of up to Mach 1, that's the speed of sound and above, and altitudes less than 200 feet, and that the B-52 falls very short of. Ironically, Starbird was talking about the need for the B-1 bomber, which has now been apparently killed by federal budget cuts. Actually, it is only America's fleet of 41 missile submarines that now really deters a possible Soviet nuclear attack. Given the current state of anti-submarine warfare, it's still impossible for the Soviets to track down and destroy our submarine force. At the same time, it might be attacking our bombers and land-based missile systems. The warhead on the Poseidon, America's main submarine launch missile, carries only about 40 kilotons of explosive power, while this is little more than twice as much as the bomb which exploded over Hiroshima. It is comparatively very small in today's terms. If the USSR were forced to have a full-scale civil defense program, America's submarine launch missiles might not be able to deliver enough megatons to kill more than 5 to 10% of the Soviet population, and some estimates go as low as 4%. On top of this, America has dismantled its one and only anti-ballistic missile system and its anti-aircraft missile defense system, partly to save money and partly because the United States seems to believe that nuclear war is prevented by making each side vulnerable to a second strike from the other. Accordingly, the United States has deliberately made itself vulnerable to a Soviet attack. But the Soviets don't believe any such thing. They have been hard at work developing the world's greatest defense system for their civilian populaces. The USSR has over 5,500 surveillance radars to help guide 10,000 surface-to-air missiles and 2,700 fighter interceptors to their targets, as well as give the Soviets an early warning of attack. Those interceptors, incidentally, have been given orders not to return alive if they're ever scrambled to meet an enemy attack, much like the Japanese kamikazes in World War II. So you can see they are really serious about it. Furthermore, the Soviet Union has 64 anti-missile missiles, and some U.S. intelligence analysts feel that the USSR is secretly developing more of those by disguising them as ordinary anti-aircraft missiles. Another defensive measure that the Soviets have taken is working on a Buck Rogers-type beam weapon to destroy incoming American missile warheads. Aviation Week magazine claims that there is hard proof, and I'm quoting their words, of 8 successful Soviet tests of beam weapons technology. While there has been much debate over how far the Russians really have gotten with their beam weapon program, it's conceded by all sides that if the Russians were to perfect such a weapon, it would allow them to attack the United States with no fear of retaliation from U.S. missiles. Another hotly debated area of Soviet defense efforts is civil defense. There are reports that the Soviets have vast underground factories where they're protecting their key industries. Major General George J. Keegan, the former chief of U.S. Air Force intelligence, claims that every daytime working industrial ship in the Soviet Union has within a few feet a vast underground bunker which could withstand pressures of up to 145 pounds per square inch. He says that unless those were hit directly, they are all going to survive. As for the Soviet leaders themselves, the former chief of Air Force intelligence believes that the Soviets possess, and he calls them, quote, the hardest man-made structures in the world, which some reports say can withstand blast pressures of more than 200 pounds per square inch. According to Keegan, there is no physical way we could destroy them. The question becomes very stark and very important. If the Soviets are developing the offensive capability to attack our nuclear weapons and the defense capability to withstand whatever we have left, are they planning to start a nuclear bomb World War III?
History shows there have always been wars, disease, and famine, threats to local populations. Never before has the possibility of total annihilation of the human race existed until this age of the arms race, nuclear stockpile, overkill, and the hydrogen bomb. An entire generation has learned to live under the shadow of the mushroom cloud. We've heard talk not of if World War III comes, but when. Ours is indeed a unique moment in history. Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, states a 1900-year-old warning by the prophet Jesus Christ. Are we living in the last days? You need to know. Request this important booklet for a full understanding. For your free copy, call 800-423-4444, toll free. That's 800-423-4444.
Pick up the telephone and dial a toll-free number, 800-423-4444, and let me send you this free brochure. The answer is, we are living in the last days of society as we know it, but we're not living in the last days of good green planet Earth, because out of some of the bad news of today, there is a good news of the coming world tomorrow, the way it is going to be, and you need to know in advance exactly what to expect. This brochure, Are We Living in the Prophesied Last Days, that Christ talked about in the Bible, is yours free of charge if you'll pick up the telephone and dial 800-423-4444. Those of you who live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii should dial area 213-577-5225. Well, all of this about the comparison between the Soviet Union and the United States boils down to just what we believe the Soviet Union might do with all that awesome conventional as well as nuclear military power. As we have seen, the United States has no realistic defense for its cities whatsoever. No American president could ever in his wildest imagination conceive of trying to attack the forces of the Soviet Union. We don't reason that way. We're not that kind of people. We wouldn't do it. Maybe we don't want to tell the Soviet Union that, but that happens to be the kind of people we are. We don't want war. And even if the United States were able to destroy every nuclear weapon and delivery system possessed by the Soviet Union except for one submarine, we still would not dare attack the Soviets, because even the loss of one large American city would be unacceptable and unthinkable to any American leader. What in the world, then, are the Soviets doing with far more power than they could ever need to ward off an attack by the United States? Why has the Soviet Union developed the world's most powerful military missile, the SS-18, when they know that a small missile could just as easily destroy any American city? The SS-18 was built for only one reason, and that is to destroy America's ICBM missiles while they are still in their silos before they could be fired. And even if the Soviets would prefer not to attack the United States, the mere possession of the military capability and the will to launch an actual nuclear attack on the United States means that they will be able to throw their weight around politically in world affairs. According to a British intelligence report in 1973, Chairman Leonid Brezhnev made one of the most chilling statements ever of a Soviet leader about East-West relations when he said, and I quote, "Trust us, comrades," he told a group of East European communist leaders, "for by 1985, as a consequence of what we are now achieving with detente, or what we're not achieving with detente, rather, we will have achieved most of our objectives in Western Europe. We will have consolidated our position. We will have improved our economy. and a decisive shift in the correlation of forces will be such that come 1985, we will be able to exert our will wherever we need to. Chilling words, we will be able to exert our will wherever we need to. Did Brezhnev mean that the USSR will be able to flagrantly intimidate the Western world by being able to realistically threaten an invasion of Europe or a nuclear war with the United States? There's evidence that the Soviet Union does believe that it could survive a nuclear war. General Keegan cites still unpublished portions of papers of a Czech military defector, Oleg Panovsky, which details the Soviet belief that they could survive a nuclear war and emerge the winner. It seems that after World War II, the USSR put 600 of their top military experts to work studying the lessons of World War II and the meaning of atomic weapons. After 15 years, they emerged from their studies with the conclusions that the USSR could fight and emerge from a nuclear war successfully. But what sort of insanity is this? What kind of thinking is it, if it is thinking? Would the Russians actually start a nuclear war because they believe they could survive one? There's more than 15 tons right now of TNT for every man, woman, and child on the face of this earth. And theoretically, an ounce of TNT is enough to kill you. One 25 megaton warhead like the SS-18 carries more explosive power than all the bombs that exploded in all of World War II. And one of our B-52s, if it were to get through, has three times that in its bomb bay. The total megatonnage of both the United States and USSR is equivalent to 1.2 million bombs of the type that destroyed Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Is there any hope of disarmament treaties? The Kellogg-Briand Pact to outlaw World War II didn't prevent World War II. And as I've said before, every single time you see nations getting together to sign a disarmament agreement, it's merely a blowing of a whistle to go find a method to get around it. For example, in Washington, the Treaty of 1922, in which the United States, Britain, and Japan were all parties, they all agreed not to build these big battleships, so instantly they began creating destroyers, cruisers, and submarines, which were not covered specifically by the treaty. And already the Soviets have broken the spirit or the letter of the first nuclear disarmament treaty, SALT I. That treaty called for every side, each side, to be able to verify whether the other was keeping its part of the bargain by forbidding the covering of atomic missile silos. The Russians have put canvas over their mobile atomic missiles, which, while they are not launched from silos, could still be used to reach the United States. So that part of the treaty has been broken already. U.S. intelligence officials also believe the Russians are testing new anti-missile systems, coding messages to their test rockets, and substituting heavy big missiles for small ones, all of which are forbidden by the treaty. And in the negotiations for the second round of SALT, the Soviets have absolutely refused any suggestion of lowering their nuclear arsenal as it now exists. What then stands between us and atomic war and the annihilation of civilization? For the moment, the primary obstacle to nuclear war is America's practically invincible fleet of 41 missile submarines. But as we've already discussed, they might someday be vulnerable to advanced anti-submarine warfare technology. In Europe, it seems that the only way the NATO allies could guarantee the continent against an invasion is to actually threaten a nuclear war, using only a small-scale tactical nuclear weapon system to hold the Russians back on the Eastern Front. In this connection, the debate over the neutron bomb is very important. The neutron bomb, a small tactical nuclear weapon with intense but short-lived radiation and reduced blast and heat, could possibly be used in Central Europe without destroying the countries it was supposed to defend. But at what cost? What will be produced? Yet another weird futuristic weapon, because we have to in order to prevent a Russian invasion of West Germany. And what about cruise missiles? It's true that if we have enough of these small pilotless buzz bombs like in World War II, but these are far more advanced on our aging B-52s, we could probably guarantee, at least for the time being, until the Soviets came up with yet another defense system, that we could destroy enough of the Soviet Union to prevent their attacking us in the first place. But even here, questions remain. Will the Soviets succeed in getting the United States to renounce cruise missile development of the second round of SALT talks? Will they come up with some yet unheard of weapon which could again give them the edge in an ever-spiraling arms race? Nobody pretends to know the full effects of nuclear war. In spite of what we learned in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the testing since, the boils, the leukemia, people burned alive, people disintegrated, the fallout, the disease, the sickness, how it would affect the delicate atmosphere of the earth, the delicate ecology, the biosphere, plants and animals. There's a lot of room for miscalculation. You cannot rule out the possibility that a full-scale nuclear war would destroy almost the whole planet. no matter what the Russian high command might believe. These are the plain facts. They just won't go away by wishing they weren't there. And you can call this doomsday if you'd like, but it happens to be the real world in which we live. A world where nuclear war is a very real threat. The facts are that the world could blow itself up. And the true conclusion is that we're living in the biblically prophesied last days. Christ spoke of how it would be possible to destroy all human life from the face of the earth when he said, "Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved." How could you understand a person nearly 2,000 years ago predicting a time in which we're living today and predicting a time when the annihilation of all of humanity was possible unless you understand it in the context of a potential worldwide nuclear bomb war? We've already seen that NATO may have to resort to using a neutron bomb in order to stop a Soviet invasion of Europe. The neutron bomb uses radiation to kill its victims, and the radiation may not take effect for several days. When we read in Revelation 9:6, quote, "In those days shall men seek death and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them." Could that be talking about the effects of a neutron bomb? Then there's the case of the anti-aircraft men at Hiroshima that were in the emplacement, had just seen parachutes dropped out of the Enola Gay. They were merely looking up into the heavens when that bomb went off and found wandering around with the skin seared off their body and the very eyes melted right out of the sockets with the liquid dribbling over their cheeks. It's gruesome and ghastly. But doesn't that almost sound like a prophecy in Zechariah, which says, and I quote, "Their flesh shall consume away while they stand on their feet, and their eyes consume away in their holes, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth"? Would this be the effect of a tactical nuclear war fought in Europe? And when the prophet Ezekiel said, quote, "The cities that are inhabited shall be laid waste," Ezekiel 12:20, didn't he mean a time in history when for the first time, unlike the ancient days in which he lived, it would be possible to raise not only a whole city, but vast sprawling megalopolises at one time? Whatever else you think about me, whatever else you think about the program, you'd better believe with all of your being that you and your private life, whatever you think, whatever you label yourself, whatever church, organization, concept, group, thought, government, political, hope, race, creed to which you belong, you'd better get used to the idea in the back of your own mind that you are living in the time of the end and the beginning of a new and different civilization on this earth. And these brochures, the Plain Truth Magazine, and this brochure I'd like to send you on Are You Living in the Last Days, are yours by return mail, absolutely free of charge if you want to bother to write. It's better to pick up the telephone and call right now because it costs you nothing and we even pay for the telephone bill. 800-423-4444 for your free copy of the current Plain Truth and this brochure, Are We Living in the Last Days? If you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct, 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.